Welcome everyone to today's lecture in compiler construction. If you remember correctly, last time we had the topic of making a regular expression into some kind of automaton. We used the construction, or we had a look at several constructions, how to create a non-deterministic finite automaton from such a regular expression. And the one that we concentrated on, because it was creating such a small automaton, was the Barry-Stethy construction. The next part that we had a look at was the aspect that in order to get a concrete program running, we needed some kind of deterministic approach for deciding whether we would match a certain regular expression or not. So non-deterministic automaton was inconvenient for us. So the next step that we wanted to achieve was to create a deterministic decision procedure. And there was the idea of making the non-deterministic automaton into a deterministic one. There is an algorithm for that, but we have seen that there are certain issues when you try to use that on arbitrary non-deterministic automata, such as there's the need to combine several of the former automaton's states into the states of the new automaton. And by pure counting, we came to the conclusion that that would be an exponential blow up that we would like to get rid of very much, as exponential algorithms are always bad. For the next step, we've seen that as we only have to deal with certain inputs at execution time, there's a whole lot of the state space that we didn't even need to explore in order to decide whether this particular input string would match a certain regular expression. So what we did was we only created the state space that we actually need for deciding for that special for that special input whether it would match our expression or not. So we had have a kind of on the fly construction of our automaton going on. Okay, so that was all the theoretical tools we needed in order to come to some kind of decision procedure. Now, all we need to do is we have to assemble all the parts to get a working scanner. So that's what the next chapter is about. How can we create a scanner from all the components that we have? So what would be the way that we would like to work with a scanner first? So the kind of programmer's interface to the whole system would be, we would like to specify expressions on one side, and on the other side we would like to be able to specify what the system should do in case it has matched the expression on the left hand side. So there's regular expressions and there's actions that are associated with these expressions. Also, you might wonder what happens when you have an input that matches several of our expressions. For example, if you think back to the examples that we had, there was the regular expression for the floating point numbers, which started with some kind of integer part. And this would be the typical example where one expression conflicts with the other one. The first part of such a floating point number is also the matching part for just an integral number. So there's a need to specify which of them is the one that is takes precedence. So we need to have a way to deal with that. And at first, what are we up for? For example, we want to have one way of dealing with these precedences is to determine them to give the expression that is mentioned at the very beginning more precedence than the expression that is further down, which would mean that give them different priorities. And what we want to compute is a kind of minimal index such that the word that we are trying to associate with one of the actions here belongs to the minimal number which we gave to these expressions. The other thing that we have is that the next issue would be that there's times where you can stop early in your input, although there would be still characters following, and when you stop early, you get the assignment to one class, and when you continue and later on find a matching, you would assign the whole thing to another class. The convention would be that we would like to have the maximal matching, which means that we prefer longer matches to smaller matches. That has turned out to be the version that is most intuitive. Okay, so how can we get all these things done? Well, at first, the thing is that as we have several of these classes, we need to combine them all into one automaton. So what we do is we expand the whole regular expressions by just alternating between all the different expressions that belong to our token classes. And then in order to get this kind of priority thing going, what we want to do is we want to introduce particular finite states to be assigned with particular cases, with particular token classes. So what we do is we take the finite states from our global automaton and partition these final states into as many final states as we need for our to differentiate between our alternatives. And what we just do is we prioritize the upper ones by starting to look at them and take all the states that belong that are in the group of final states and are also last states for the first regular expression, and take those as the ones that determine whether the thing should be sorted into the first token class. With all the ones that are remaining, which are these ones, we intersect with the last states for the second regular expression. By that we get the finite states that are associated with the second token class, and so on. So you see, when you use these Barisethi constructions, you can reuse these last sets and apply them here when you assemble your whole automaton for your scanner, because you need these last sets for that. Okay. So at the end, when we need to decide to which of these token classes my input belongs, what I have to do is I have to check which of these finite state sets are my my automaton is in after reading this this input, then I can choose the action corresponding with the index of the final state. Okay, so that is how I can implement such a priority. Next thing is that we still need to find a way to produce long matches. And again, it's just a little addendum to the approach that we already have. What we do is we just kind of remember when we last matched a final when we were last in the final state, and we continue on reading and see whether we can come up with another new final state that matches a longer input. Then I reset my old pointer to this one and go on until I definitely know that with the input that I have now, I cannot match any of my clauses, and then I go back to my saved last spot. So how it would is I manage two pointers into my input, A and B, and I also cache two a pair of states, and they are associated with each other. So the first pointer is associated to the first state, second pointer is associated with the second state. And the ones that are in first position are the ones that I use for saving my old positions and states, and the next ones are the ones that I use for advancing in the input. So in an example, let's have this one here, where I have statement straight from programming language. Yeah, now I would let's imagine that I've already read a little bit of the whole thing, and I start with the state where I need to initialize everything. So I don't have any old pointer right now, so I'm starting at some kind of invalid position with an invalid state. And I start reading with the input pointer still not advanced into my input and with the initial state. And then I continue on to read through my input from one symbol to another while manipulating my state here. So I do that. And finally, I will come to a point where my actual pointer is pointing at the symbol here, which corresponds to the final state in my example automaton. This one is always adjusted as long as I stand within the final state. So in this case, where I so far still read my identifier, will be also in the final state like this one. And now the interesting part is where this pointer leaves the identifier and goes on to something that doesn't belong to the identifier anymore. So what's happening there is that I will find that there's no valid transition in my automaton for this input. So I realize that I cannot match anything anymore from here. So what I have to do is I have to look back at this one and see, I have found this finite state, and the input that is the longest match is the one that is from the start to the point where the pointer is pointing to. And I can then remove this part and restart the whole algorithm like this. Okay, so that's what you would do for the longest matches. Yeah, so apart from that, with the things that we have so far, we can already create some kind of useful scanner. But for practical implementations, it turns out that it's quite convenient to have something a little bit more powerful in the sense of that you would like to specify more easily more complex situations. For example, you would like to have control about the more control about how the automaton is kind of created or used. And what comes into play in this part is that we would like to scan our input with the assumption that we right now we have a kind of set of regular expressions that are valid right now. And when I have found some special combinations going on, I would like to say, okay, this is for me the sign that I leave a certain section of my input. Now I want I enter a new section, and for this one I want to have completely different sets of regular expressions for tokens. So you can think of this situation as kind of stateful scanning, where you have kind of global states that are differentiating certain sections of your input file. So what we would like to be able to is to specify groups of regular expressions that are valid for a certain section, and you can do that with this concept of states in your scanner. What is a typical example where you would like to have such a state? Imagine that you have a complex programming language where you have keywords and identifiers and the whole hierarchy of complicated lexical structures, and you have a concept like comments. And comments are areas where you can write anything, and it doesn't change your what the program is doing until you close this comment. And in this case, you would like the scanner to behave completely different from the point on where the scanner has read the introductory symbol for this comment. For example, if you have some kind of situation like in the mainstream programming languages where you specify some kind of code and then you want to comment out a certain fraction of your code where you have used something different, which would actually be program code if you would interpret it accordingly. Well, in this case, you want to completely ignore the units of code that would lexically match to the expressions that you had for the area before the comment started. In these cases, you would introduce two different states for scanning. You would have one that is convenient for ordinary statements and bodies and area in the source code, and one state that handles all the stuff that can happen in your comments. There's even there's even languages where you have features like bracket counting for your comments, where the comment only closes when you have the correct number of closing comment operators used, so that the whole thing is well embraced, so to say. Yeah. So you need to have different states in your scanner. So what you do there is you first introduce some kind of syntax to specify the whole thing. In our case, we would just continue with our ordinary scanner specifications and then just mark these areas with an identifier, which would be this one here, that is denominating the block that comes afterwards as this one belongs to the state called, like we have here. in our example for the comments, we do it like, yeah, we have the standard state for scanning, which is in this case like in all the major tools called YY initial. That's kind of an historical name that's developed over time, but in this case most of the modern tools use it. And you have to imagine that there's a whole lot of other matching keywords and all other stuff also belonging to this initial state. And as soon as the scanner hits the opening of such a comment, it will force the automaton behind to change its state. You can achieve that in the major scanner generators by calling something like yybegin and then use the identifier that's that you have given to the block that you want the other state to be. So in this case, this would be the comment over here, and in this block, you would treat everything by throwing it away until you you match another closing comment symbol, and then return to your original state. So that would be a valid implementation for the multi-line comments. Okay, so I think that's pretty much all. There's a few remarks for you at home, but I think it would be quite nice before we go to the syntactic analysis. It would be quite nice to actually have a look at the way that a real scanner generator works. So let's try it out for once. If you want to start with, well, let's take Java. That's one that you all have in your beginner's courses. So for the purpose of having a scanner in Java, you would choose an appropriate Java scanner generator. It's, you can use something like JLEX or JFLEX. There's different products available. The ones that we do also in our tutorial sessions is JFLEX. You can download the whole thing as a jar package and just start it from command line. If you do that, you get some kind of graphical menu where you can just load your lexical specification files and choose some output directory where the final product will afterwards be. But for now, let's concentrate on what the what the input file looks like. You have you have a little convention. That means you have to use these percent signs here. Those are delimiters for certain sections in these scanner files. Well, let's come to them later on. At first, let's decide on what we want to use our scanner for. Well, as we don't have so much time, let's choose something quite simple. We want to scan expressions that that are made for quite simplistic calculators. Well, what should the calculator be able to do? It should add or subtract, multiply, and be able to put braces around expressions. So what I need to do or specify for these for this sort of input language is the particular units that I'm interested in. So for such a calculator input, I would, for example, be interested in, let's say, the operators that I need. So what's typical operators. It would be, for example, a plus symbol. So that is something I would be interested. And you see, what I do is I just mention the character that I want to need. I have to escape them with these symbols here. If I want to do subtraction, I do the same thing. And you also notice that I almost automatically add blocks over here. These are the blocks that are reserved for the action specifications, which are the callbacks whenever I detect my things here. Yeah, and I can introduce several of them, and so on. That's the very basics of what my scanner supports as syntax. Yeah. Now, let's come to something more more complex and more interesting, which is, well, the other parts that I need in my calculator is I need numbers. So I have to introduce a token class that is non-constant, that works with patterns. So how can I do that? Well, I have the possibility here to introduce a kind of regular expressions in the whole thing. So I can introduce a regular expression for the number, and you see I automatically switch to the section between these delimiters, which is here. So I try to introduce the regular expression for numbers. Well, what is a number? It's not so difficult. I have the particular digits, and what I can do in JFlex is I can just use syntax like this, and this gives me alternation between all the digits between 0 and 9. And the little plus symbol here is that I have to match with several of them, but at least one of them, because that is a very basic way to specify my numbers. Now I have to access them in a certain way in the area where I specify my action codes, and I do that with these curly brackets. So I can refer to my number regular expression like this, and so like this. Okay, so that's how I introduce my regular expression into the whole system. Now you might wonder what you can do in the action codes. Well, you can do just arbitrary statements over there. So when we just want to have kind of a sanity check, what my scanner is detecting, I can just do prints. For example, and now every time my scanner is running on such an input, it will print number detected when it has found one of these numbers in the input. So we might be interested in actually trying what is coming out of the whole thing. So let's try and generate something. So I can also use my JFlex thing as a command line tool. This created a file like this, which I can open. So you see it has generated a whole lot of Java code. Which is pretty unreadable because it encodes the automata states into a string, which is some kind of numerical encoding. I don't even want to know what that does. But the important thing is that there is there's a part where the actions are triggered. So there's the code that I've written, which is just inserted in there. And yeah, there's methods to trigger the whole scanning, which is this YYLEX method. That is kind of the interface that you get for this scanner. The idea is that in a while loop, you call this YYLEX, and each time it returns, it gives you a new token. In our little scanner here, we haven't specified some kind of returning symbol, but just kind of as a side effect, some printouts. So we haven't seen actually the kind of symbols that we would be assembling, but as we still need to get to know what the next phase needs as input, I leave it to the tutorials to introduce you to how the symbols have to be constructed. The way that it is done is that, for short, you would return the new symbol here and give it some kind of speaking name like plus or something, and you have to catch it on the other side. But that's just how it works roughly. You will work on that in the tutorial for sure. Okay, so let's close without saving and start again with the next part. So now you've seen how such a scanner generator works, and you've seen at least a little bit how you would work with such a scanner generator. We can come to the next phase, which would be the syntactic analysis. And if you remember the architecture for our global plan, what the task that we want to achieve with our syntactic analysis is that as an input we get the token stream, which is kind of little structs that hold an identifier for the class of the token that we are we have detected, together with actual data. And the parser then creates from that an hierarchical representation of the whole thing, which is the syntax tree. Yeah. Okay, so at first we need to come to the a rough idea of what such hierarchical information would look like. Well, the thing is that we in programs we often find larger program units, kind of complex units or composed units of my input. Well, examples for that would be, for example, expressions, which is composed from the very basic units like identifiers or constants and operators. And there's statements. That's something like calls or assignments, everything that you have terminated with such a semicolon in the mainstream languages. You also have something like conditional branches, or you have your branch conditions, which themselves are also composed from smaller units. There's loops, while for, and there's method bodies, and all these things are kind of composed units of your program, so they are hierarchical units that we want to create with our parser. And the way that we tackle the whole task is once again generation. The idea is that this is also a kind of repetitive kind of stupid task that we don't want to do manually. So the thing is that we want to specify only the things that are really particular for only the parts that I need, and have the generator create something that can be run on the machine and gives me my my desired output. So the idea to do that is, well, something hierarchical is well, it should ring a bell, especially when you have been to theoretical computer science. Hierarchies are quite often related to something like grammars or languages that that are created from grammars. So for specification of my parser input, I would like to use grammars and specify how my language looks like. And what the generator can do about that is it can take my grammar and produce an automaton once again. Automata are always nice for execution because they are only table lookups and lookups into the input, and then you can just compare them and decide what your new state is. And yeah, that's what you would really like to do. And once again, the idea would be that you specify the structure of your program language with your grammar productions, and the way how to benefit from these specifications would be that for each of these production variants, you also specify some kind of action code, like you did for the scanner. And the idea is that whenever the parser comes to the conclusion that this particular production was involved in the derivation of the input, or the consummation of the input, depends on how you see the whole thing, it would trigger the action that you have prepared for this purpose. And you can, in within this action, assemble your syntactical representation of the input. That means that in most cases you will try to create a subtree of your syntax tree. But we will come to what is happening for your actions when you have specified the productions a little bit later on. At first, let's create a common starting ground for our next few sessions. That means we have to introduce the basics of context-free grammars and automata. So let's quickly try to get around this. So context-free grammars. What is context-free grammars? Well, context-free grammars are sets of productions. These productions are dealing with symbols. These symbols are kind of twofold. The symbols can be terminal symbols, that is, the symbols that actually appear in your input, and also symbols that are only for the management of the tree hierarchy, which is non-terminal symbols. So that's just for wording that you have on the next few slides. So when we deal with grammars in context of our compiler, we need to think of, well, what would be convenient a convenient choice for the terminals of our grammar. What is the basics on which our grammars should work? What are these units? And yeah, at first it might look like a good idea to have the input string as kind of the terminals of your grammar, but it turns out that this makes your whole specification kind of difficult, as you have to always, when you have tokens that are composed from several several subparts, you would have to redo the whole thing that the scanner has already done. You have to kind of repeat the same rules that your Lexer has already decided for you. So that is not a good idea. The choice for your terminals should be the tokens. In kind of, well, you specify your terminals as the token classes. So the idea is that your hierarchy starts by talking about how token classes can be arranged, so to say. So, yeah, and it also turns out that hierarchy is, in most cases, not really dependent on the actual input, but more on the kind of units that you use there. So, terminals are the token classes that your scanner produces sequences of. Okay. And the actual hierarchy is then specified with context-free grammars. So what do we need for context-free grammars? Yeah, well, there's, as I said, the symbols. The symbols are twofold. There's the non-terminal symbols and the terminal symbols. Terminals are the ones that that are actually occurring in your input. The non-terminals are the ones that are inner nodes of your syntax tree. The other thing that you need as well, you need to specify the system with a set of rules, how these symbols are connected to each other and how the hierarchy is actually made from. And the last component is that you need to come up with the actual root of your syntax tree. What is the symbol that dominates everything in your language? So that is the start symbol, and that is all that you need for your context-free grammars. Yeah. What are rules looking? Or what is a production made of? Well, we have an operator, that is this becomes operator here, or just this simple arrow. And this is always, this comes always with a left-hand side that consists of a single symbol, and the symbol always needs to be a non-terminal symbol. And the right-hand side is, marked with alpha here, which is a so-called sentence form of your production. And what is a sentence form? Well, it is just a sequence of symbols, and it's not important whether it's non-terminals or terminals. So that is how your productions look like. At least in case you are talking about context-free grammars. Yeah. Example, what would be an example grammar? Well, you have your becomes operator. The left-hand side is only non-terminals, and the right-hand side is either non-terminals or terminals. For example, the sentence form A large as B. You can also use epsilon, which means that that is the empty sentence form or right-hand side. Yeah. In our example, the language that we have specified here is probably the most famous one for these context-free grammars. It's the one that is counting the number of opening symbols and the number of closing symbols, and only matches those that are equal. Okay. So for the next few slides, we will have certain conventions once again, like we had for our regular languages and automata. So for the non-terminals, we will always find green color in our symbols. We will also always use uppercase letters for non-terminals, or we will mark them specially when we have examples from the practical world where more verbose names for our symbols are needed. Then we will mark them specially. And for the terminals, we will always have blue as color, and we will use lowercase letters or, well, yeah, just plain names. I promised you practical examples, so that is what a typical grammar, which would be useful for programming languages, would look like. So this is the grammar for statements. So the root for the whole thing would be S. And what my grammar is all about is statements, and a statement can be, that is what you can find over here. So a statement becomes if, while, or this rexp. What's rexp for? Regular expression? Well, or something like right-hand side expression. Well, we'll see for sure in the tutorials. So, an if statement, what would an if statement be? An if statement would start with the if keyword, and would also have brackets, and it would have another right-hand side expression inside. After this expression comes the statement that is executed in the then part, and would have the keyword else, and another statement. And so on. So there's a whole lot of productions that are related to statements that specify how the while loop, how the if looks like, and how the at last what the right hand side expression looks like. Well, this might be an int. Does it mean that we have int over here? Well, no, it does not. It means the token class of an integer. That means an integer constant in this case. Then we might also find a left-hand side expression, or something more complex, which is an assignment that has on the left-hand side expression, and on the right-hand side the right-hand side expression. So that explains why there's an R or an L for the expression, because expressions can look differently depending on whether they occur on the right-hand side or on the left-hand side. And for these purposes, we introduce already on the syntactic level different productions. And a left-hand side expression, well, that is something that might be